So, how's my hair, first of all? Okay. Because I had the same barber on Commercial Drive there for 15 years. You know the guy, right? Daniel. And when he picked it up and moved all the way to the West End, oh, I mourned him like a long-term lover. I did. I mean, a less than satisfactory roll in the hay with a perfect stranger, now that you can shake off in a couple of days. But a bad haircut, that shit takes time to heal. And when I first got to Ottawa, I made the mistake of stumbling into this kind of fancy high-end salon on Bank Street there, right in the middle of Gay Town. I didn't know what to do, I was desperate. My bangs were all hanging, I couldn't see my ears. Ugh, it was awful. $80. $80, and a kind of disturbingly sensual rosemary and mint-infused scalp massage later. I stumbled out back onto Bank Street with a slightly more effeminate version of the haircut I had walked in there with, approximately 4 millimeters shorter than the one I had woken up with that morning. Don't get me wrong, okay? How's that over there? Is that better? Okay. Don't get me wrong. It was an amazing consumer experience, okay? It was. But at that rate, by my calculations, because I needed a haircut 4 days later, right? So by my calculations, it was going to cost me approximately $600 a month to keep my bangs out of my eyes, right? I needed a barber. You know what I'm talking about, AJ? I needed a good old-fashioned $12, wait your turn, take a little off the top kind of guy like I had back home. And I found him, eventually, at the other end of Bank Street. Sun-faded, swirling barber's pole. It led to a staircase, turned into a narrow hallway humbly covered by decades-old carpet hammered down by thousands of pairs of dress shoes and work boots, a worn-out roadmap, directed me to a doorway. Now, you know you got the right place by the smell. Old Spice-scented men's talcum powder. Really bad cologne. That weird blue stuff they dip the combs in. Kind of a leftover waft of cigar from late last night. Someone having a little puff by himself when the door's all locked, eh? Everyone's gone home for the day. Now my new barber, his name was Nabil. He's Lebanese, gigantic man, hands the size of small family hams. Okay? Could literally crack a walnut with his handshake. And the first time I went in, I kind of, luckily, accidentally, I brought my girlfriend with me. Now, this turned out to be a brilliant idea. Because she's gorgeous, right? And her silver curls and her dimples. They bought me just that kind of street cred that a barely bicepsed mustache-less guy like me needs. When about to be introduced to all the good old boys in the neighborhood. I mean, maybe I'm just a soft-spoken young fellow with long eyelashes. Or maybe I'm one of those kind of women who could never land herself a decent man. Why can't I find a decent man? Who knows what they're thinking, right? But hey, at least my girlfriend is hot. Sit down right here, boss, he says. He calls everybody boss, right? And he says, will you take a look at, oh my God, fellas, take a look at his lady friend. Oh no, my God, isn't that a beautiful girl? Now, he got no argument from me, right? And I'm not sure exactly what it feels like for her to be talked about in the third person when she's actually present, you know, to overhear conversations just about just how attractive she is. But I know we both assumed that he meant well. Now, some would call this allowing my female partner to be treated as an object and trading on patriarchal standards of feminine desirability in order to garner favor in a male-dominated environment. Me, I call it getting a cheap haircut. So after he was finished giving me the perfect haircut, in a little under 10 minutes, for $15, including a generous tip, he whipped that towel away from around my neck. He let the chair down, spun me around, held up that little hand mirror so I could take a look at the back, and he said, "There you go. Take a look at that. Handsome guy." Now, there is always a chance that at some point in this interaction, something, it could be anything, will tip those scales, and whoever I'm talking to will all of a sudden, for some reason, maybe start thinking that maybe I might not be exactly what they might have thought I was at first, whatever the fuck that was, right? They might not care at all. Tell you the truth, most people don't care at all. But some people care a whole lot. They might change their tone of voice. They might change their body language. They might change their mind about how much they like me. And oddly, I have really no control over any of this. I mean, I know what some of you are thinking. You know, I could go about my daily business, and each and every time I interact with the perfect stranger, I could say, "Hello, my name is Ivan, and I need a library book, or a latte, or a car wash, or a haircut." And just in case you're wondering, even though you don't really need to know how to sell me a newspaper, I guess I should come up front and tell you that I am a predominantly estrogen-based organism. And you may now proceed to treat me thusly, based on how much respect you have for women. Whether or not you hate gay people, and how you feel inside about folks who, even when forced into a gender box, just refuse to close the lid. I could say all that, but that would be unwieldy. It would be none of their business. And most importantly, it would be a definite overshare. It's true. So mostly I just try to be personable. I try to be polite. I try not to assume anything about anybody. And I hope for the best. So I went in a couple of months ago, get my hair cut. Nabil, he went on at some length about where was my beautiful girlfriend? Why was she breaking his heart? Breaking his heart! By not coming in to visit more often. And he said to me, "You know, I've always liked you, Ivan. I'm going to do you a favor." "Yep. I'm going to tell you where to buy a whole leg of lamb." That's right. You go out and you buy yourself a decent, I am talking about a decent bottle of wine, young man. You cook a nice meal for that girl. You make sure she keeps coming back to Ottawa to visit us. So I asked him. I asked him how long he'd been married for. He shook his head. He was sweeping my back of my neck, hey, with that brush with the Old Spice talcum powder on there. He said, "Me, boss? No, me. I've been divorced now. I've been divorced now 26 years. So I laughed out loud. Hey, and I asked him, "Why should I be taking his advice then on keeping a quality woman around, right?" Maybe I laughed like a girl. although I highly fucking doubt it. Maybe he finally noticed that, kind of like Peter Pan, hey? I got wrinkles. I got gray hair. But I somehow still don't need to shave. Who can know what it was? But he stopped all of a sudden. Kind of a long second. He took another look at me. And then his eyes met mine in the mirror. Then he shook his head. He said, you tell that beautiful girl of yours, you tell her to come back in here and visit me next time she's in town. You tell her. I love her. And then he let the chair down. And he spun it around. And he whipped that towel off from around my neck and he held up that little mirror for me to see the back. But this time, he smiled at me and he put his hand on my shoulder. He said, there now. There you go. Aren't you beautiful too? Okay, so I totally thought I was busted, right? And so I went in the next time because it's hard to find a decent barber. And you know, even if you think you might be in physical danger, you know, you go, you do what you gotta do. And so I go back in the next month after that, and it's just me and this kind of steroid, kind of pumped up young guy, about 26 years old, and I walked in, and Nabil said, Ivan, oh my God, and he says to the guy, you should see this guy's girlfriend. Oh my God, he is a lucky man. And the guy was sitting in the chair, and he's looking at me, he's looking at Nabil, he's looking at me, and so I go, and then, I'm not kidding you, the last thing Nabil said to me was, I went in, I told him, Nabil, it's my last haircut. And he said, you know, some people come in here and you cut their hair, it's okay, whatever. Other people come in, you get to know them a little bit, you get to like them, then they break your heart. And the last thing he said to me was, He put his hands right on my cheeks, and he said, look at the face. You're so handsome, you're almost pretty. Like a woman. I'm serious. Okay, so I was gonna do this one now. Yeah, I hope you guys take this all right. hang on. Yeah, you guys will be fine with this. You know I'm only kidding. Where is it? There we go. All right. So I used to have two dogs. Deja. This big old hairy old stinky farty old husky mix. And the little guy. A Pekingese Pomeranian cross with a foreskin abnormality. Named Goliath. I gave him a tough name, not only because he would go on to weigh 8 pounds when full grown, but also because his penis cannot descend like the penises of other, less special dogs do. When he gets an erection, which is often, instead of a little lipstick appearing, he gets kind of a weird lump in the side of his belly. Anyway. So almost a year ago, you think I'm joking, don't you? Yeah. That's why we found each other. I was like, oh my God, my penis never descended either. How much for a dickless Pomeranian? $20 is the answer to that question, just in case you're wondering. So last March, Deja, my old lady dog, she passed away. After 15 years, 16 almost, years of friendship and shedding, and then the farting, which got really bad at the end. But so now it's just me and the little dog, right? And Goliath and I, we had a hard time adjusting at first. Him, he was wandering around the house looking for his friend. Me trying not to cry every time I had to sweep the floor. But slowly, we're getting used to life without the old dog. I've taken a bit of flack in the past for being a butch with a fluffy little dog on a leash, but then the big dog, hey? She'd come running up with this giant stick in her mouth, and whoever was hassling me would back down, their masculine image of me somehow repaired and intact again. Having one big dog and one little one was kind of like those guys driving a minivan with two car seats in the back and a bumper sticker that says, "My other car is a Harley." Deja was my Harley, but she's gone. So this other day, this is in Ottawa, this butch friend of mine met Goliath for the first time, and she laughed out loud at me, right in his fluffy face, which was right beside my face, hey, because I was holding him under my arm. "Fuck, I never pictured you with a lap dog," she smirked. "I'm a multifaceted and complex individual," I told her. She snorted. I said, "My truck's fucking bigger than yours, okay?" This shut her up. Later that night in a bar, she offered to buy me a beer. "I can't drink beer," I told her. "I'm a gluten intolerant." I explained, hating the way this sounded before it even left my mouth, and she raised an eyebrow. "How about I get you a white wine then?" I'm like, "How about I kick your fucking ass right now?" She bought me this vodka and cranberry juice, which came with a little thin pink straw, and smiled smugly at me for the rest of the evening from behind a pint of Guinness. My girlfriend, she was in town last weekend, they're visiting, and we ran into an old coworker of hers on the street, a professional lesbian. They got them in Ottawa, hey? They do. And she's wearing a smart two-piece pantsuit. And small talk was exchanged, and then we parted ways. "Have you ever met her partner?" I asked my sweetheart. "Once," she says, "at this wine and cheese type thing. Her and her girlfriend were both wearing skirts. Kind of freaked me out." I shuddered. "What, God, what do you think they do in bed?" That part's a joke. My girlfriend shrugged, then we laughed. We both know already that we're a little old school, right? When it comes to things like all femme action or butch on butch love. It's not that I don't completely support the right of others to do what they wish, how they want, with whomever is consenting. Don't get me wrong. It's just not how I'm wired. The landscape my libido responds to is curvy and wears lipstick and is attracted to biceps and big black boots. So I took my curvy and lipsticked lady friend to Montreal. For a romantic getaway, we walked and shopped and fucked and ate and walked. And my new big black boots, they were fucking killing my feet. But I tried to keep this to myself. My sweetheart, she went to French immersion school when she was a kid. Where I was a lucky participant in a pilot project up north where I learned Tlingit. It's a First Nations language spoken mostly in the southern Yukon. Now, learning Tlingit, it was cool, right? It really was, but not so handy later in life when ordering cappuccinos in Montreal, right? I did study some French in high school, and I've had a few Quebecois girlfriends over the years, so I mostly understand the gist of a conversation, but I often freeze up a little when it comes to actually speaking out loud in French, especially when nervous or overly sober. I'm more of a listener en français, which I like to think of as a welcome change of pace from my English self. Someone told me one time to get one of those pedals like Dirksen has here, and I was like, I already talk too much. Like, I don't want to be layering myself over myself. No. So anyway, our last morning in Montreal, I managed to mumble my way through ordering two medium coffees, one orange juice, and a bottle of water in French, and then I ducked into the women's washroom. And there were two middle-aged ladies washing their hands, which they immediately began to wave in my face as they cursed me in what I can only guess was most likely statistically French, right? Pushing me with their words backwards towards the bathroom door as they advance, and I panicked, forgetting even how to speak much English for a minute. And I fumbled frantically around in my head for the right words in French. The only words I could find were simple. A baby sentence. Lacking in grammar or style, I blurted them out crudely. My last defense, je suis femme. Now, what I meant, of course, to say was, I am sorry. I don't mean to frighten or alarm you in what you are thinking is, you know, your private space and all, but contrary to what you seem to think, I'm a predominantly estrogen-based organism, like I was saying earlier, and I wish to avail myself of the facilities, just like everybody else gets to, but what I actually said was, I am woman. They both stopped for a millisecond, looked at each other, and then back at me, and then continued to scold me right out the door, right? So Fidus turned finally and bolted for the men's room, which seemed to have been hosed down with stale urine and was out of toilet paper. Someone had also borrowed the stall door and toilet seat and forgot to return them. Yeah. Next time I need to use the salle de bain, I will have to remember to bring a pink cocktail and my little dog. Okay, so the next one I want to do is it has a little story that I usually do beforehand. Has anybody ever heard me do the story about where the mafia guy teaches me how to tie a tie? Okay, so it's a true story. I was in Calgary, and I was kind of drunk, and I had a tie on, and I got accosted by this even drunker guy who was, he claimed to be from the mafia. Who knew? Hey, Calgary was a hotbed of organized crime. But, and he insisted that it was a total tragedy, a huge shame that I had never been properly taught how to tie a double Windsor knot. And so he wouldn't really take no for an answer, so I ended up receiving this kind of non-consensual lesson in proper manly attire from a guy with one leg of his track pants stuffed into a white sweat sock. And so that's sort of the pre-story to this story that I'm about to tell you. And I know it's never a dull moment, hey, in Ivanland. And the other thing I have to tell you is I have a huge family. I have 36 first cousins, one being Garth, who's probably on his way back to Port Moody right now. Probably in trouble with my grandma now. What do you mean? He's family. And I'm like, if I let the whole family in, then no one would have paid. How was I going to pay Dirksen? That would have been bad. So anyway, I have a gigantic family. I have 14 uncles. I have 12 aunts, okay? So sometimes I get to go home for a holiday. And I race around for a couple of days trying to visit everyone in the family. And by the time I get on the plane, I'm pretty much more exhausted than I was before I went on vacation. And the last couple times I went home to the Yukon were for business. So I raced around, rehearsals, interviews, gigs, whatever. And then in all my spare time, I raced around trying to visit everyone in the family. Now see, this works best when someone cooks a turkey, or there's a birthday party, or they stage a drug intervention, or something like that, right? So several of us congregate in the same house for a little while, and then I can multitask. I can visit four of my aunties while simultaneously getting something to eat and waiting for my laundry to dry, right? Works out good. So last April, I think it was, I went home for this young authors conference. And I spent a couple of days teaching creative writing in the very same high school that I once attended, was kicked out of, and then eventually they begrudgingly let me graduate from. And so the result of going back there to teach resulted in a kind of a complex mix of emotions. It was a sort of a potent blend of mostly triumph and nausea, I'd say. And So I was buying some Advil in the Shoppers Drug Mart right after school on the Friday night when I ran into one of my aunties, and she informed me that she had heard a rumor that at least two, maybe three of my uncles were all going to be having a drink at the Copper King off the Alaska Highway there, you know, right after work. And I thought, perfect. So I multitask, because I also needed a bit of a drink, right? So I went, and it turns out that my Uncle Rob and my Uncle John, they had had an argument about something a couple of days before, and they hadn't really made up yet, so they were still not speaking to one another. So the two brothers were actually sitting at separate tables about 5 feet apart with their backs turned to each other. Small towns, big families. You just learn to work around stuff, right? So I sat with one uncle and I had a drink, and then I crossed the floor, you know, to sit down with my other uncle, and this quickly became totally ridiculous. So even though I've quit, I insisted that both of them headed outside to have a cigarette at the same time with me. And my Aunt Kathy, Rob's wife, she picked up her purse and she came along too. So Uncle John, he took a long drag off his smoke and he squinted at me. He'd had a couple of drinks already. He'd knocked off work a little early. And he narrowed his eyes. He said, is that a clip-on tie you got on? I was like, no way, man. Double Windsor. He harumphed, that's no double Windsor. Kathy snorted at her brother-in-law. And just what the fuck would you know about tying a tie, Jonathan? I believe the last tie you wore was at your wedding. This was kind of an inside joke because Uncle John never got married, right? So anyway. So John, he reached over and he shook my tie undone. He said, give me that thing. I can still tie a perfect double Windsor. The old man, he showed us all. He flipped up the collar on his denim work shirt. He looped the tie around his neck. And one of the other dudes who had been standing next to us smoking, he stepped forward, his giant gut kind of bulging from behind a navy blue t-shirt, black leather caterpillar baseball cap on his head, blowing smoke from under the brim of it, right? And he says, mind if I watch? My wife used to tie my ties for me. She passed away 3 years ago now. Breast cancer. Haven't been able to dress up since. Of course, this totally broke my heart. So I smiled at the guy. I stepped back, let him join our little circle. Uncle John, he narrowed a beer-loosened eye at the tie in his hands. I'll be honest with you, things were not going well for him. He was drunk, eh, and left-handed and dyslexic. So the wide part of the tie was kind of hanging about 4 inches below his goatee. The skinny part was dangling down almost at his knees, right? And this label part, that was facing the front. And he had definitely tied some form of a knot, but it wasn't a double. It certainly wasn't a Windsor. Kathy shook her head in disgust. She said, take that thing off. Give it to your niece. Jesus Christ. Let her show you. Gather in a crowd here. And it was true. This skinny guy in the Carhartt overalls had also stepped up, claiming that he was divorced and thus also needed tie-tying lessons, right? So I took a breath, I carefully smoothed out the tie on my chest, and I said, okay, gentlemen, most importantly, you gotta start with the right amount of fabric on either side of your neck, okay? They all leaned forward. Fascinated. When I finished, they all stood back, lit new cigarettes. The guy with the black leather baseball hat, he cleared his throat. He says, so, you having a sex change or whatever? You wish you were a guy or something like that? See, this is actually what I love about good old Yukon boys. There is none of this sensitive new age fumbling around commercial drive, you know, stumbling over political correctness. No, no, no. They just blurt shit out. No, I say. Actually, I just like to wear men's clothes. I don't know. I feel more comfortable in them. And this seemed to be enough of an explanation for him. Thank Christ. So I stopped there, hoping someone would change the subject. Oh, no, no, no. My Uncle Rob, he picked up that ball, didn't he? And he ran with it. He said, well, you did have that one operation. Remember? So that everyone would think you were a man? You remember? They stuck that tube in your ear and they sucked half your brain out. The best and most hilarious part came next because Kathy laughed out loud. Uncle John choked on his cigarette, but the guy with the baseball hat, he kind of knitted his eyebrows, went, huh? Like he did not get it at all. Which he didn't. Neither did the guy in the overalls. They both just stood there, looking confused, right? Seriously, I could not write a punchline like that. I laughed so hard I needed to pee. And so did my Aunt Kathy. Well, gentlemen, I said, if we're all finished up here, I'm going to have to excuse myself. Actually, I need to go to use the ladies' room. And I swung that big old wooden door open for my auntie. And I left the boys outside. I can still see them there in my mind, standing in a circle. Van Camp with that big old northern sun still hanging large and low in the sky behind them. Sound of big trucks gearing down on the highway in the background, talking, laughing, smoking. So I'm gonna try out a brand new one on you here. Let me know after what do you think of this? Last month I spent about 10 days at home doing research for this new project I'm working on, and I went through as many family photos as I could lay my hands on, sorting through this big magic red bag of memorabilia my Aunt Roberta keeps in her basement, sifting through the gigantic mishmash of memories crammed into a box in my mother's guest room closet. My grandma Pat, she won the organization award. Hers were some of the only photographs actually placed into photograph albums in the whole family, and each album even had a glossary of subjects and decades listed on the inside cover in her bold, confident script. I found a citation for drunk driving from the 70s from one of my uncles, who's now a priest, actually, but... this was the 70s, so it wasn't totally out of character for him, but it was issued at 10 a.m. in the morning, which I found impressive, even for him, right? I unfolded a stiff and stern letter written by the principal of my father's high school, which would later go on to be my high school, explaining to his parents just why he was going to have to repeat grade 10. It wasn't for lack of intelligence. he made sure to point out. I found a lot of pictures of me as a kid. Way more than I remember anyone taking at the time. There's this one of my dad and my Uncle Rob on either end of a broomstick loaded down with lake trout, and I am crouching underneath the fish between the two men, fish blood splattered like all the way past my elbows, proudly holding up a string of grayling. And then there's me in a campground somewhere, exploding out of the willow bushes, carrying a giant log of firewood on my back. It's like this. And the first day of grade one, all in a lineup with all the other little girls on the block, all the neighbor girls and my little sister, they're all in sparkly new dresses, their chubby little knees scrubbed and squishing out of the tops of sparkling white knee socks. I, on the other hand, am wearing blue corduroys, black rubber boots with red brown toes, and my Davy Crockett fringed buckskin jacket. Grade two class photo. A front toothless me in a plaid shirt that I'd kill for to this day. Triple pearly snaps done right up to my chin, sporting an Andy Gibbish kind of shag do. Me smiling in full hockey gear, lined up with all my teammates, the only girl in the entire boys' league. None of this was surprising to me. I appear to be the exact same kid I remember being. What I could not believe, in retrospect, is that anyone in my family could have actually been surprised when I came out of the closet at 18. I mean, my God, the evidence was everywhere. Right from the start, how could anyone have missed it? They must have been feigning surprise, I figured. I decided to investigate. I called up my Auntie Roberta first, because it was almost 8 o'clock in the evening and she goes to bed early. I asked her if she ever suspected that I was gay when I was little, if she ever wondered about the hockey and the buckskin jackets and the whatnot. I heard the kitchen chair complain about being dragged across the linoleum, and she sat down. I know this sounds silly, but I always just thought you were just who you were. An amazing little strong personality. I thought you got it from your dad. I asked her if Gran had ever said anything to her about me and the gay. Well, your Gran's gone to bed early. I'm like, how early did she go to bed? Anyway, she's gone to bed already, but I do remember her saying one time to me that you were exactly right. All of you. All you kids turned out to be exactly who God meant you to be. I mean, you can call her in the morning, ask her yourself if you want to, but I know that's what she'll say. My Grandma Pat, always good for an awesome quote. As usual, I never labeled you as anything. You were just boyish, and you did boyish things. Keep in mind that we just didn't think like that back then, you see. Any knowledge of homosexuality I may have had would have gone back actually to Victorian times. All those novels. Yeah. You probably skirted under my radar, no pun intended. Because you weren't wearing hoop skirts and high button boots. My mom swore. She had no clue whatsoever. My mind never went there. I just let you be what you wanted to be. Not very helpful, I guess. I'm sorry. My Aunt Kathy echoed my mom. I just thought you're an obnoxious little brat because you refused to wear a dress to our wedding. My Aunt Nora thought my sister and I were just polar opposites. That was all. Carrie was the prissy little girl. And you weren't the prissy little girl. You were just your own little people. I remember, though, when you were in your teens. I remember thinking, knowing, somehow, you weren't happy. You just seemed tense, inside your own skin. I knew there was something going on, but I didn't know what it was. We didn't have to have a label for everything back then. My Uncle John was cooking an omelet. in the background when I talked to him. Sorry, kiddo, I can't identify the moment we realized you had gone to the dark side. No, we were just glad you weren't born stupid. No cure for stupid. There was that one time, you were only like 6 or so, and you gave me supreme shit because I got drunk and I wasn't attending to my fishing rod, but I don't think that had much to do with your sexuality. My Uncle Rob was pensive, thinking over his response quite a bit before speaking. Well, he says, you can see why we wouldn't have thought that much about it. I mean, there is a lot of hetero butch chicks out there, you know, especially up here. On the other hand, he continued, maybe a guy should have twigged due to your aversion to wearing a dress and whatnot, but you know what I've always said. It's your soap and it's your dick and you can wash it as fast as you want. Yeah. So that it appears for all those years, in all those photographs, unless they're all bullshitting me, which is a possibility, if they're telling the truth, there was only one member of my family wondering about me. And that was me. Thank you very much. Thanks a lot, everyone.